Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
This week's Dumpty Dum is from Marie Bray. What a Dumpty Dum. Thank you, Marie. And a Dumpty Dum this week is sponsored by Charlotte Moore, who became a new Patreon. Thank you.
So if you've had all of that good stuff, this must be Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality lucky drama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the Californian beach babe, who is Royfield Brown, and today I'm joined by the Breton galette-eating person.
That is Jacqueline Berto in Saint-Gwen. On this episode, we'll hear from Jen Witherspoon, Claire from Clapham, Christopher McKiddie, Christine, also known as Gadget Girl Murdoch, and my fellow Breton Briton from Torquay, Natalie.
Plus, we're going to have Tweet of the Week from our Purple Pumpkin, and we have our social media roundup from Stephen Bodum. Now, folks, we need to implore you to go onto our YouTube channel. Quite simply, go onto YouTube, type in Dumpty Dum, and you will see loads of great content which we've amassed over the last 2 to 3 years. And the other kind of begging and pleading and imploring thing is please go and write us a review. Now, I know it's not the easiest thing in the world to go onto Apple iTunes and to find how exactly you do that. So if you look at the show notes, so all the gumph that comes underneath the title of the podcast, there's going to be a link. So you can go onto YouTube and actually watch how it can and should be done. Because I know it's not the easiest thing. So I know a lot of you have actually called and says, I'm actually trying to do it, but I can't find how to do it. So, right, look at the show notes. There's a link right there. Now, we have the Facebook roundup. We're going to welcome new members to our wonderful Facebook group.
But first, let's look at the week in Ambridge with our Sue, the Queen or Tart.
Hello, lovely people. It's Siri, Queen Otter on the Twitters, and another week in Ambridge. And it felt like a much better week on the Archers to me. George got his comeuppance when the turkey poults he bought in a lay-by turned out not to be a rare, slow-growing heritage breed, but were in fact pheasants. He's going to be at Eddie's beck and call for weeks until he finds a way to get another one over on Eddie. And when did he learn to drive, I wonder? Isn't he still, like, on a stabilisers on his bike? Eddie, in the meantime, got his comeuppance when Jolene and Kenton tried to persuade him they were selling the bull and it might turn into luxury flats, so there would be no pub. They were thankfully pulling his leg over the diary kerfuffle we had last week. They had rumbled him, and now he has to buy drinks. That's a proper comeuppance indeed. Bert Fry beat Joe Grundy from beyond the grave. His soil won a prize at the Flower and Produce Show, even if it was Stella who actually picked up the trophy. Carol Toboggan, Trigorin, whatever she's called, got disqualified, and Clary Love won prizes. Pitt was downright rude to Chelsea over getting Rosie's hair cut. She has the subtlety of a newspaper-wrapped house brick. But then she redeemed herself by being a friend to Chelsea and talking about Chelsea's friend's pregnancy in a really calming way. I almost liked her for a moment. Leonard gave Jill a gift of photos from a proper photographer for her 92nd birthday. Is this the only thing that Leonard can't do? And then there was a lot of heavy sighing about who would be in them. Was Beth in or out? Why did he have them taken off to Shula pushed off up north? Still, Rosie had nice hair thanks to Chelsea. What was happening with Ben and Beth was the source of much speculation. Ben wanted her to find someone else. Beth wants absolute honesty so that they might survive. We shall see. Leonard also has Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen levels of interior design know-how and stopped Ruth buying the wrong sort of wardrobes. Toby pushed off to the other side of the Midlands, but it might as well be Timbuktu for all the gnashing and wailing. Why is it so difficult for people to drive around in the Midlands, unless it's all the people who are hanging around in lay-bys, flogging poultry and causing mayhem? Joy installed a hot tub. In October. Well, I guess she'll be ready for climate change. The grim-faced assassin of Joy, Helen, complained that Joy and Mick made too much noise late at night. I am glad she was assertive enough to tell Joy, who promptly offered to take the whole thing out again. They seemed to reach a compromise. Helen and Lee got the better of the deal, I think, with pies and such like from Joy's kitchen. Joy got to be quiet. There will be much quieter evenings in the estate from now on. Well, my lovelies, till next week then. It should be a good one.
I don't know about you, Madame Berto, but it's not often I disagree wildly, vociferously, and fundamentally with our Sue, Queen or Tart. But I don't think that was a good week in Ambridge. I don't know about you.
It was a very interesting week in many ways, on many levels, but I agree. I think Sue has been very brave. She's got to put a very good face on it. but there were things that happened that were just so inconsistent. Just irritated the hell out of me sometimes. I was shouting at trees as I walked my dogs.
Problems. Isn't that kind of a sign of early onset?
Oh, bound to be. Bound to be. So what? That's life, isn't it?
Fair enough. Right. Now, dear listener, I'm going to let you into a little bit of a secret, right? I only thought we had four calls, and two of them from RJ and Ambridge Pony Club. So I was about to say at the top of the show, well, Madame Berto, you and I talking to each other, tell us about the goings-on in the town council of San Juan. And then you said, no, but we have all these other calls. So that any
it
further...
It slipped review, in under the radar just before, right, whilst you were having a cup of tea, obviously.
Let's have a little bit of Linda answering the phone.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Third are Dart in Bedfordshire, in a little village called Clapham. It's our Claire.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. I'm probably a little bit behind the event on this, but I've been really pondering the whole Ben and Chelsea pregnancy thing. And the thing that's been really sticking with me is that Chelsea said she'd not seen Ben between the night that they had sex and the day she told him that she was pregnant. And that's weeks. And in the meantime, during that period of time, we know that Ben went off and got himself checked out of the clinic because he knew he'd had unprotected sex. Chelsea went and took the morning after pill because she knew she'd had unprotected sex. And they both clearly had recognised that this had happened, but they didn't speak to each other about it. And Ben got back together with Beth, but didn't try and square things off or close things off with Chelsea beforehand. I'm just finding all that a bit weird. I mean, Ben's obviously behaviour is slightly out of character to have done it in the first place. I think that's what we're saying, because he's all so lovely now. But I just think that's really out of character. Why wouldn't he have at least tried to check in with her and also advised her to go and take some contraception or something? I don't know. Plus, Ben was totally off his face. And I can't help but think that if it was the other way around and Chelsea had been completely off her face, people would be very critical of Ben for taking advantage. And I haven't heard anyone saying that Chelsea was taking advantage, but you know, it's one way of painting it. And I don't say that it's fair, because I think, you know, Chelsea's in a difficult position. I'm glad she's getting some advice now. But still, yeah, anyway, I'm still grappling with this. Is Ben good or not? No, no idea. Keep up the good work. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Mm. I think Claire summed up how I feel about it all as well. I'm finding it very difficult to work out who's good, who's bad, and where it's going.
I thought Claire was pretty clear. Ben bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben bad, but Chelsea hasn't had any criticism. Everybody loves Chelsea, don't they?
But, you know, and I think this is the reason why this is so well written. Because here are two people who have been very honest with the fact that they weren't really into the other. It was not even a night thing. It was a one incident thing, but
opportunist shagging.
There you go. Well done. And Ben said he was wasted. Chelsea admitted that he was completely and utterly drunk, but there is this massive consequence to it. I don't think any of them are bad or any of them are particularly good in this regard. I think Ben is doing what many men wouldn't in this situation, which is, to the best of his ability, he's trying to face up to it, and he is speaking to the potential mother, to the person he had sex with, and he's turned round to his partner and at the earliest possible opportunity has admitted this.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I think we need to recognise that. But also, he is still a relatively young man and he doesn't know which way he's up at the moment. Mm-hmm. Ditto, Chelsea. Who we've both said, yes, she's 17, isn't she? She's
17. Yeah, she is. Yeah. He's only 20.
Yeah. So she isn't even technically an adult, and emotionally, she's a few years younger.
She's young.
She's very young. I think she's more like 14. She reacts emotionally to absolutely everything. Claire, you know, sounds like I'm disagreeing with everybody today. You know, I disagreed with Suey Queen Autart. I kind of disagree with Claire. And I got big love for Claire for no other reason than we do a podcast together. But like,
isn't it?
Anyway, so I don't know about you, Madame Berto, but if you got any more to follow up with.
I don't want to say anything else, because I've listened to the other calls and I think other people say it better than me. Although, in fact, I made notes whilst listening to the omnibus through this morning. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the first calls I listened to were from Jen, and she said everything that I'd made notes about, apart from one thing about Lee.
Right.
So I think maybe we should listen to somebody else's call.
All right. So from Clapham. Now, Claire, we go to Ireland, and it's Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, part one.
Greetings, Royfield and Jacqueline. Jen here. Kind of sorry to do this, because I do like the Archers, but after all of the nonsense where we have Ben acting like no one's ever had a crisis pregnancy before, this week has to be one of the worst weeks ever. I mean, one of the joys of this thing is that it is 70 years old, that we've known these characters most of our lives, that they have reference material, that writers are meant to keep the characters at least relatively consistent, even if they might have the odd weird diversion. But all of the storylines this week are completely nonsensical and completely ignoring everything that has happened before. For a start, the ridiculous photograph and Leonard being all upset that Beth's not in it. They did it the week after Shula left. Jill's own daughter wasn't in it. Dan was back, Jill's grandchild. Nobody's particularly bothered that either Shula nor Dan are in it. And of course, Mariel's not going to come back. They didn't even mention that Mariel couldn't be in it. So that's all just total nonsense. Then we have Eddie and Jolene, and my God, was that all dragged out, and I don't think it's over yet, unfortunately. Eddie and Jolene used to carry on, and Clary was well aware of it. I mean, I don't think they did anything, but Clary was certainly aware, and there was a lot of flirting, and who knows, they were in a band together, all of that. I mean, just nonsensical. And then George. George, as a kid, when he was silent, and he seemed to be a nice kid, he went round the birds with Will all the time, and he was even on one notable occasion taught how to go poaching by Eddie. No way would he not know what a pheasant was.
Oh, there you go. That's the end of part one on Jen, Ambridge Pony Club. And because I only thought we had four calls, I deliberately left it in two parts, thinking that we need to fill dead air, so to speak. I don't know one end of a pheasant from another. But then again, I was born in the city, born in on the mean streets of Birmingham, which really is the suburban streets of Birmingham. And
about as far as you can get from a pheasant as possible.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And our Barrett Box estate, you know, there's no such thing as pheasants or wildlife and whatever. The odd occasional fox, maybe. But anyway, I would have thought George would have known a pheasant from a turkey.
Yeah, exactly. It was just so typical. He was poor, really. Ignored everything about his childhood and his upbringing.
And then the other thing, you know, if he was sold slow-growing turkeys, no, you need them quickly to grow because it's for Christmas.
Yeah, but it was all about the heritage stuff. It was kind of a bit of a thumbing the nose at food snobbery and slow food and things that people feel very important, people who've got the money to spend on.
Like,
you know, and there are only 15 birds, for goodness sakes. You can make a stew with them anyway.
The one thing which I did note, and I don't know if this is just me, who the glass is always half full, but George seemed to make relative amends afterwards by doing really well with the construction of the coop, didn't he?
I agree. He proved that he had a bit of an input into it, yeah.
And actually, you know, he realised he'd messed up and he was doing a good job, right? So
yeah,
maybe,
he was.
You know, maybe George isn't quite the wrong un that we think.
Yeah, no, because I bet he's been... Eddie's behaviour with him, just colluding with him, you know, but doing blackmail on your own grandson to get him to run at his beck and call. Oh, God, so irritating.
Eddie's kind of fallen out of our good graces recently, hasn't he?
He has, because he was being so grown up for such a long time. I mean, he's an elderly man now, for goodness sake. We've all got to face up to being good at one point or other.
I think maybe what they're setting us up for here is the Eddie and Joe show part two, isn't it? Because he can't be that with his two sons.
You're right, yeah.
It's going to be him and his grandson, their little schemes and, you know, the little ne'er-do-wellery, you know.
Yeah,
that's
they're taking
what they're
over, aren't they?
For.
Yeah, you're right. They are setting us all up for it. But for me, there's something about George and the way he's ready to manipulate situations, because with his other granny, Susan, I just feel there's something extra evil being written in about him.
Now you see, now I'm wildly disagreeing with you, because I'm going the other way, because of the way that he made that coop, and Eddie says, fair play, done really well there, and he put his back into it, because George has always been about cutting corners, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, you're right. God, I've said you're right three times, Royfield.
I think you'll find I'm always right. I'm a bit infallible, like popes of old can never be wrong.
All right, fine. I'm glad you told me that. I must write that on every page of my notes.
Now, what else did Jen say at the start? Because
the photo stuff. Yes. Oh, God. I mean, that was a big thing with Beth and the big fuss about it. And I thought Ben was going to tell Granny Jill about why it was all about. So I thought it was going to, because we've always said, you know, this great relationship. That didn't happen. So I thought that's what they were setting it up for. But, you know, there's so many people missing. Shula. We didn't hear of Elizabeth going over on the day either. No, sorry.
You know what? Jen was spot on and you're spot on.
She was. Look, yeah.
That one of the things which there used to be, and I forget her name now, and but I'm going to remember it for next week, but they used to be a continuity person who was employed by the Archers, and she did that job all by herself for years. And when she retired, I think she retired since we started doing Dumpty Dum, they've never filled her post. Yeah. And I think this is where she comes into her own, because she knew everybody's birthdays, she knew every kind of familial connection, who had had an affair with who kissed who when they were teenagers, etc. So things like this, she would have said, oh, you're missing this person or that person. Mm. So hence the writer goes, oh, yes, we need Jill to say, oh, wouldn't it be a shame? Isn't it sad that Meriel isn't with us? It's little things like that.
Yeah, it is. Those little, as you say, it's continuity, but it's about people, isn't it? And getting all those connections and who did what and who said what to who, that we as a hive mind, the fans, remember these little things and we pick up on them. And then, there's nobody at Archer's HQ that's doing that at the moment. And so, and I think it's difficult. It must be very difficult for the writers, because they go down a line and think, oh, well, I'll put that, that and that in. And then everybody screeches at them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Jen, I think you're spot on. And again, you know, just to reiterate the point, because Shula has just left and they're having a family photo, you'd think somebody says, oh, isn't it a shame that Shula can't be there? Just like a throwaway line. It's all it needed. It's all it needed.
Exactly, exactly. Or why didn't Shula go to the photographer last week with Dan and then they could be all photoshopped into a mass photo? Technology, mate, technology. We're good at that.
Chew that. My dad has, I call it a Frankenstein photo, which is a Noah christening. So it's me, Noah, my dad and my grandma, his mum.
Oh, wow.
My dad's mum, all together. And my dad has added so many members of the family in various states of bad Photoshop to it. It's ridiculous. It's such a Frankenstein family photo. It's like that. He did the first one and he got somebody to do it. And it looked really convincing. He put his dad, my granddad, in it. Got carried away with himself. All manner of old great grandmas and grandpas have been added to this picture. And it looks bizarre. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Jen, that was your part one. Now let's go to Nat.
Hello, Dumpty Dummer. It's Natalie from Torquay here. It's been a while, as I don't think I've called in since P&Q. First of all, I want to say hello to Jacqueline as a fellow Breton Briton. My mum lives in Saint-Guinot and I actually ate some galettes from Plisalat today, fresh from the freezer. It was lush with some lovely Val-d'Orance cider. Anyway, back to my call. I just want to say that things are really hard for Beth. I think we can all sympathise with Jessie and Ben, but from Beth's point of view, it's all a bloody mess. No one's prepared for that situation and she just needs to cling on to what her and Ben have. I wonder what Chelsea's visit to the doctor will bring. In terms of drama value, it could be anything from her not actually being pregnant to her having an ectopic pregnancy, to her finally deciding what to do when things are presented factually for her without her mum being on her back all the bloody time. That Tracy really makes the world for her own back, doesn't she? She's as subtle as bagpipes in the morning. Those are only accepted on the ferry over to Brittany to signal the beginning of my holidays in my world. Anyway, that's all from now. Talk to you soonish and hello, Royfield. Bye.
Oh, hello, Natalie. So did you say her mum was also from Saint-Gwen?
No, Saint-Gwenno is about 30 minutes drive from here, but it's on. It's in the same department, Côte d'Amour, as I am in. So not very far away. So that's why I put in the script about the Breton eating, galette eating.
Now I understand it. Now I understand it. So what else did our Gaelic resident of Torquay ruminate over.
I agree with her. I liked her speculation about the what the visit to the doctors will have brought up. So she's saying, is there a problem? Is there going to be a problem? Is she really pregnant? Good speculation. I don't know the answer. Wait and see.
True that. I know that people are kind of like counting the weeks, aren't they? Because, the you know, with each passing day, it's harder to be fully in control of making a decision. A decision is going to be made for you if she is pregnant. So, yeah, it's important that she goes to the docs sooner rather than later. I think that was significant this week.
Yeah,
you know, the conversation with Pip and Pip saying, well, what she said, so much so that when she goes home, she does say, okay, so let's go see someone, you know.
Yeah.
Midwife doctor.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's not often I'd say anything about Pip as good, but I did feel that that conversation was about the friend, was gentle and pushed her towards making a decision about at least talking to some health professional. Thank God.
Absolutely. And thank you for the kind welcome, Natalie. It's good to be back. I quite like doing it with Jacqueline. She's awesome. All right. So that is Natalie. We've had Jen part one. We've had Claire from Clapham, who are violently and fundamentally and ideologically disagreed with. Why don't we go to the upper lower east west side? And it's time for some spoons. It's Mr. Witherspoon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Royfield, Jacqueline, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. It was one of those weeks where I felt a bit out of sync with the goings-on in Ambridge. Why all the interest in David and Ruth redoing a bedroom? To literally show what 60-year-olds do with an empty nest? Is this the beginning of a storyline in which a mysterious stranger arrives at Brookfield? Ah, the endless possibilities of that storyline. Next, I was surprised that Clary was going along with Eddie's latest scam, especially since it involved her. Usually, she's good at drawing a line in the sand. At least we know with Eddie that no bad deed of his goes unrevealed, and Eddie eventually has to make his apologies, as he did this week. Speaking of Eddie, that leads us to grandparents and their grandkids. It's nice to see such strong cross-generational relationships in Ambridge. It's not nice to see one grandparent blackmailing his grandson and making him his servant, like Eddie is doing with George. With a role model like that, George's chances of turning into a good adult are pretty small. The other grandparent-grandchild relationship we visited this week was Jill and Ben. As Jacqueline mentioned last time, we've seen theirs grow since Ben was a boy helping Jill with the bees. I found the whole photography scene with them, Beth, and Leonard a bit awkward, but perhaps a setup to Ben confessing to his grandmother about the pregnancy. How will she react? Will she be angry, warm and supportive, sympathetic to Beth? To Chelsea? Will Ben be moving back into his bedroom? See, I pulled these 2 minutes all together. Talk to you soon.
He's so good, isn't he, our Mr. Spoon?
He is excellent, yeah. But that was somebody else. See, I'd made that note before listening to the calls this evening about, yeah, don't like Eddie doing this thing, as I already said. And there was the photo thing about Ben being able to talk to Jill and telling her about the situation. So I'm not a psychiatrist, psychologist or plumber, but Witherspoon is.
Thinking about it, since Ben has found out, we've had, two scenes, maybe even three scenes with him and his grandma, and we know they're so close. Leads me to believe that, yes, part of Ben's kind of internal angst is the fact that should he tell grandma type of thing, because there's no scenes with Ben and David and Ruth, right, Annie?
Hardly ever. But no. What about those scenes with Ruth this week? Didn't you think she was a bit odd?
No more odd than normal, really.
So something a bit fishy about the way her and Leonard were talking about Jill. Didn't like it. It made me feel like they were kind of talking about her behind her back.
No. Though I like Leonard. Do not get me wrong. No, right. I think he's a plot device to calm waters. That's the only reason why you have Leonard in any scene. Mm. You know. And also just to be Mr. Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, he is, isn't he?
Yeah. But like, who is Leonard?
Apart from Tom Riddlesworth's dad. That's who he is, isn't he?
Yeah. But in terms of the universe of the Archers, who is he? No.
He's a blow-in.
You know, he does have a daughter.
Oh, dear. Don't bring things up with me.
We don't even know.
I know he was married. He's a widower. Yeah. And they met, Jill and him met at the Laurels because his wife was in the Laurels.
You're out remembering me there. I know they've met in the last 4 years.
Oh, I might have made that up, Roy Fields. Please.
Well, I know that very obviously they met because otherwise they wouldn't be carrying on, but they're not carrying on. Being really good friends, shall we?
Yeah.
Confidants, companions. There you go. Right. But he's completely and utterly put his own rest of his life completely to one side. He doesn't talk about, he doesn't say, I'm going around to my mate Pat's house to do something or hanging out with Martin or whatever. Or it's just like him. I love him. I don't know
where he fits in, do we?
It's a plot device. Not a character, it's a plot device. Now, we are four calls in. So the best and the easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. Don't forget the T in the middle. And you'll also find a link in the show notes.
Please don't forget that we need your calls in by 6 p.m. on Sunday UK time. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes and bear in mind that you need to be at least 18 to take part. There's no maximum age limit, though.
We are the People's Podcast, so we need your contribution to make this podcast fly. There are three things you can do first. First of all, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on whatever podcast you listen to us on. Give us a 5-star review, and that'd be greatly appreciated. 5-star reviews are awesome. They're even a little bit more awesomer if they are done via Apple Podcasts. And in the show notes is a link as to how that can be done. Now, finally, and the third thing is that you can consider becoming a Patreon. And we had not one, but two new Patrons this week. Whoop, whoop. Patreon is a way of tipping creators and there are different levels with different rewards. So if you just go to patreon.com/dumptydum, we'll be chuffed to bits to have your support. And our new patron this week, we're going to say it again, is Charlotte Moore. She's awesome. Thank you for that, Charlotte. Now, before we go back to our calls, don't forget you can send us an email if you don't fancy hearing the sound of your own voice. We're going on to dumdydum.com and hitting the Contact Us tab. So back to caller inners, and we've had Witherspoon. Now let's go to Gadget Girly.
Oh, Jacqueline and Royfield and all Dumpty Dummers. Gadget Girly here, also known as Christine Murdoch. When I read the question on Twitter, does anyone like Helen? I hadn't yet listened to Friday's episode. Oh, my days. Does she realise how selfish she is being? Okay to ask Joy to keep things quiet on a school night. However, as has already been said, Joy is inflicted with grime and drumming. Of course, we all had sympathy for Helen during the Rob years. However, not too long after they met, she did know he was married. He even had her cater for a Titchener party, I seem to remember. Surely that should have set alarm bells ringing that he was a bit of a control freak. Yes, I have sympathy for Helen, but I don't think I would be sharing a bottle of wine with her in the Bull. On another note entirely, well done, Pip.
Oh, well, we've most definitely and utterly bigged Pip up, haven't we, for the conversation that she had with Chelsea.
But yeah, at the end of the week, but at the beginning of the week, he could have slapped her. No, didn't like the haircut business.
Well, the haircut business, I'm going to put that to one side, right? Because I think what I heard was a very busy mother who's rushing from one thing to another, who has a small child with them and was just trying to like hand over this child so they could have the haircut. So that's all I'm going to say about that. And she came over as a little bit brusque. You're pulling some very funny faces right now.
I think you're talking a load of rubbish, Royfield. Sorry.
Well, I'm trying to be my most generous.
That is very generous. That is extremely generous of you about Pip now. She came across as entitled and everybody jump. You know, poor Chelsea. I mean, I know she doesn't know that Chelsea's pregnant, but she's been working at Lower Loxley. If she finishes at 2:30, I'll be round at 3:00. I just think Pip came across as very entitled. And also, what kind of mother is Pip? I'm sorry. I mean, I have had awkward children in my life, but not being able to get her out of the car, you just take them out of the car, don't you? She's a big child though, isn't she? Maybe she's too heavy for a mum to pull out. Oh, dear. It makes me think that, in fact, on my notes that I've written, is Rosie spoiled?
Well, I think so. And Jill had been indulging. I haven't seen. That's the reason why she's the size that she is, because
great grandma. Yeah, and it's been very much a big thing this week, hasn't it? That Rosie is their angel. So maybe she's a little overindulged, but maybe I'm an old-fashioned mum. I would have been very cross if my child refused to get out of the car.
You're one of these kind of stern Victorian disciplinarian type of parents.
Yeah, that's me, Royf. That's definitely me.
Hello, everybody. It's Christopher here. Before I start, I want to respond to Royfield's claim when I called in previously that because I live near a beach in Scotland, that means I'm on some godforsaken, windswept, grey, dismal rock overlooking the North Sea. where I live, we get more sunshine than anywhere else in the UK, which is admittedly is not the greatest of claims. I want to speak a little bit about Chelsea and specifically her noises. She communicates a lot through noise rather than words, and she has one particular noise that she makes, and she uses it to convey a variety of emotions. It could be embarrassment or pleasure or sadness, and it sounds like... No, that's not it. It's... I'm not sure. I don't think I can do it. It's hugely endearing. And Chelsea's like that. Just when you think you can't find her any more irritating, she brings you back in and makes you love her again. So I think that's what makes her such a great character. I have real concerns about George. George is a wrong-un, okay? And that's okay. But I think that he is going to go beyond... I think the problem is George is smart. And I think that is going to take him beyond the realm of bag snatching and holding up a post office. I think he has his mind on higher things. And I think that in the future, people will get badly hurt because of that. I hope I'm wrong. But although my notion of his intelligence may slightly be hampered by the fact that he can't tell the difference between a pheasant and a turkey. But never mind. Cheerio.
He's not wrong about the sounds that Chelsea makes. He's not wrong at all.
No, not at all. Well, that's one of the reasons I think that, as you said earlier, that she's a bit of a young teenager because she hasn't learned to control all that kind of guffawing and whatever. I liked Christopher's attempts at repeating, though. I've worked out they must live in Aberdeen.
Just because somewhere's sunny doesn't mean it's warm at all, does it?
No, it says. No, it doesn't at all. Because here today, it's been beautifully sunny and 19 degrees. And in the south of France, it's like 25 degrees, but raining. So,
And like the Arctic Circle gets like 6 months worth of sun.
And it's very cold because it's Arctic, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So ditto, Scotland's sun, it's still cold and it's still fundamentally grey, just saying.
Well, the Granite City, isn't it, Aberdeen?
Absolutely.
So very grey.
Absolutely.
But it's the seaside. Well, we've narrowed it down now. So when I'm on my next world's tour of the United Kingdom, I'll be able to come and listen to people talking in Aberdeen because I like their voices.
I thought you were going to say you're going to go up there and pay Christopher a visit.
Well, no, I don't suppose I would ever. I've never managed to meet up with anybody, have I? Well, I have. I've met up with a few Dumdy Dummers, but only that's just because I happen to be here. Never mind, I might meet up with Natalie one day if she comes to visit her mum.
Oh, that'd be lovely. And just whilst we're on the thought of meeting up, a few weeks ago I said, you know, we should do something for 2023. Yeah. And there's a lovely thread on that, isn't there, on the Facebook
yeah,
page?
There
people
is.
Saying, I'm free, I can make it, whatever. So as soon as plans start to solidify, good listener, we will let you know. So that's that. That's Christopher. I think the last person to go to is Jen. It's her part two.
Helen Archer is... just had to ring in and say that. I really don't like Helen. She's not my favourite character at the best of times. Can't stand her complete lack of empathy for anybody else. The way she treats Clary, the way she treats Susan. I think she's the most god-awful middle-class performance parenting. Anyway, this week confirmed my prejudice. How she behaved over Joy was absolutely disgusting. They have two kids learning to play the drums in the house. Plus Lee practicing, plus Helen shrieking, Henry, at all hours. And they dare to get a bit upset when the poor woman gets a life and gets a hot tub. Oh my goodness. Yes, not good. Also not good this week, Ben. When Ben said, yeah, I'd like you to go round and see her, I assumed that meant Chelsea, not Beth. For goodness sake, there's poor Chelsea going through like this terrible trauma, physical, mental, emotional, and can't walk away from her bad choice like Ben can. And he sends Josh round to see if poor old Beth is all right. Good God. Would somebody please give Ben a good kick up the arse and tell him if he's big enough and ugly enough to get involved in that kind of thing, he's big enough and ugly enough to go round and be some sort of use and support and take her to the midwife. That's all. Great week on the Archers. Cheers.
Oh, God, Helen. Oh, God. Suck the joy out of Joy. Oh,
yes. I was like, what am I listening to here?
Yeah.
You play the drums. The most antisocial of all instruments is the drums. The only thing more antisocial than that is the violin when someone's learning and can't play it. That is dreadful.
That is awful. Although one of my children learnt the harp. I'll tell you what, that is very, very difficult to listen to at the beginning. And it's bloody heavy to move around as well. Because they can't even do it by themselves. So, no, awful. Oh, but Helen, honestly, she was... Helen, yeah, and in fact, Gadget Girly there mentioned the question that was asked. I think it was actually asked by Jen from Ambridge Pony Club. Mm-hmm. And the string was enormous. It was long of people making comments. And I agree with them entirely. I mean, I think Jen talks about it in her second call. But, oh dear. Right.
But you know what? Last thing I'll say, drums are bloody antisocial, right? And grime, you have to really be sympathetic to your neighbours playing grime at inappropriate times. That is not at all a sociable type of music, and one which doesn't cross generations and cultures very easily. Yeah. It sounds like unadulterated noise, and that's coming from somebody who's kind of adjacent to that culture.
Yes, well... I had a child home with me this week, and I happened to be listening as we were getting ready to go out for a walk. I was waiting for her to come down and get shoes on, and I was listening to catching up on the previous evening's Archers. And she said, "Why would the child be listening to that out loud at 8 o'clock in the morning? It would have headphones on, for goodness sake."
You're not wrong, are you? You and your granddaughter are not wrong.
No, exactly. No child listens to music out loud in their room anymore. They've all got headphones on. Don't share your music with anyone. Yeah, I think the script writers missed a modern trick there.
They didn't need to put the grime in because you can't listen to the drums with headphones. Even that, you actually can if it's an electric set. You can.
Yeah. No, we've got a drum set here and I never hear it being played, but it's played quite often.
There you go. Right. Okay. Yeah,
they have the headphones on, pianos, everything. They've all got headphones nowadays, you know. You don't have to share your things. Although I can't imagine Joy and Mick in the hot tub with headphones on. They have the sound system, they have the giggles, they have the bubbles. Oh, God, let them enjoy themselves.
Exactly.
It's going to be deep midwinter in about a week's time, so... And then they won't be able to afford the electric to heat the
well, top. I did think that. You know, that the whole thing about the getting the hot tub flies in the face of the cost of living crisis. You know, it really does.
It was, but don't forget, this script was probably written 5 or 6 months ago before we realised the impact of the cost of living crisis. But also, the water, well, I mean, we've got friends here who've got hot tubs, but because you can't top anything up because of the drought. We're still on water shortage measures, strict shortage measures. So you can't fill it up with water or anything. So,
other than the Prosecco flowing, bit of Barry Manilow with the playing out loud, you know, what else is going on in that hot tub? What do you reckon?
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about it. Sex soup. I don't like the idea of hot tubs anyway, because I don't like that thing about the idea of people's body juices mixing.
Beg your pardon?
Sitting, you know, everything from your body flows out into the water, dead skin cells, etc., and then they sit in warm water and you sit in it. Nah, sorry, I'm not a hot tub kind of girl. I'm a cold dip in the lake kind of girl.
Ooh. What else? The whole Ben, if you're big enough to get yourself in that situation, if he'd have gone round there and says, "I'll go with you to the doc, to the midwife, to whoever," she wouldn't have gone with him. She needed to have the conversation with Pip, didn't she? She's had to come to this at her own time, at her own speed, surely.
Yeah, I think she has. I mean, it's been very frustrating for us because most of us are screaming at the radio or the phone or whatever, saying, "Oh, for goodness sake, go see a health professional, get it sorted, talk to someone, get rid," or whatever. She's been in her own little quandary-filled world, hasn't she? And I don't think Ben going and talking to her and saying, "Let's go in, look in, find out about this together," would have helped anyone.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have done it.
And Ben... going to say he's in an impossible position. It's not quite impossible, but it's incredibly fraught and it's incredibly tricky. and he is in love with Beth, and he doesn't have the life skills, the language, the emotional vocabulary to reassure her. And he's just scared, isn't he? You know, understandably so. You know, he's 20, 21. And this is where I think his relationship with his brother is really actually shining through. That when we've heard them beforehand, you know, kind of dismissive as his little brother, and Josh is in his own entrepreneurial world, has taken time to realise how important this relationship is to his brother and to try and act as some level of mediator. Beth and Ben are communicating, but they're both raw right now, and understandably so. And they're living in that small space together. And I think this is good on Josh. And Ben is lucky to have the brother that he has right now.
Yeah, he's. I just wish that we could have Beth talking to somebody other than Josh, because I think she needs somebody to help her. She doesn't appear to have any friends. We know her sister and her have a fraught relationship. She can't probably talk to her dad because of what his reaction would be. I would just wish she had somebody she could talk to, because I think she needs to talk.
Yeah, that's very true. But invariably, whoever she's going to speak to is going to say, get rid, get out of there. And not without good reason.
Yeah.
You know, this is a tricky situation. No, and
frankly, I would say the same thing. If she was my daughter or my niece or my friend's daughter who happened to talk to me, I would say, you know, you're very young. Something's happened. Will you ever trust him again? You've already had a blip. Maybe the time to take a break from this relationship and really reflect and go off and do something different, meet other people, and then, you know, maybe later on you'll come back together. Because they've been written into this as the great love thing, but they're very, very young.
I agree, Madame Berto. So that's the end of the caller-inners. Now it's time for email-inners. Madame Berto, what do we have?
Nothing that we're going to talk about, I don't think.
Normally, after caller-inners, we have email-inners, but we didn't have any. So, moving on from that, it's in red, Madame Berto.
Now it's reviews from Apple iTunes. This week we had two, and they're both 5 stars. Hooray!
Wonderful. This podcast is a must for any Archers fan. Great to hear the opinions of the caller-inners. I love listening to this as soon as it pops into my podcast library. Thank you. And that's from Helly3456. Thank you, Helly. And we had a second one from Better Together. I love the Archers. I don't have anyone in real life who knows or cares to discuss the show. The podcast is well done, both production and content. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
We also had a message wanting to give us a 5-star review from Mary Bray. But like me, she can't work out how to do it on Apple iTunes, which we talked about earlier. And actually, you've got to sing this one to Barwick Green, Whitefield.
Oh, gosh.
The review she sent by email.
Okay. What you think of Dum-de-Dum? It's my favourite podcast. Do you like the Dum-de-Dum with Royfield and Jacqueline too? Caller in, email in, shoulder roundups too. If you like the Dum-de-Dum, give it a 5-star review.
Yay! Well done. Not rehearsed at all. Don't you dare cut that out.
Now let's hear from our Facebook posse and what they've been talking about on Facebook with our Stephen Bowden.
Hello, you two. Stephen here with this week's roundup of the conversations on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. We start with Pip and Rosie's haircut. Harry Clark was unimpressed. Having a 10-minute conversation with Pip sounds exactly how I'd imagine a conversation with Boris Johnson would go. Self-obsessed is an understatement. And Suzanne Steele agreed. Oh my heavens, can Pip not take no for an answer? Lillian McCarthy added, it's a shame we didn't get to hear what Chelsea said to Rosie to persuade her to get out of the car. But what annoyed me more than anything was that as soon as Chelsea had done what Pip wanted, Pip didn't have time for her after that and brushed her off when she wanted to ask her a question. Julia Delitzsch saw things differently. Am I mistaken? Or was Pip actually being nice? Melly McMerriweather agreed. I have to say, to me she gets a bad rap from some listeners. I don't mind her character, sometimes a little shrill, but I'm not one to talk. glass houses and all that. And Lillian McCarthy, despite her earlier views, also agreed. She can be nice sometimes. Remember how supportive she was to Stella over her water phobia. The reason for the haircut was so that Rosie would look good in the family photograph that Leonard had organised for Jill's birthday, which raised an interesting question. This family portrait no longer includes Shula. I wonder why? Asked Pierre Kelly. Shirley Farrant-Anstey was thinking along the same lines. If the family were all there, I'm wondering why they couldn't delay Shula's departure to Sunderland until after her mum's birthday and the big family photograph session. Or bring her back for a surprise visit, which I was half waiting for. Staying at Brookfield for a bit, there has also been quite a lot of discussion of David and Ruth's plans to offer bed and breakfast. Brookfield to become a B&B? Faulty Arches? Asked Bill Brown. Leo Horsemeyer provided some historical context. Jill and Phil did B&B years ago. Rickyard has been used as a holiday let too. While Pam DeLay offered a cultural view. Looking at it optimistically, it has to be better than the Bates Motel, although David dressing up as Jill wouldn't surprise me in the least bit. Leslie Southgate asks a question on everybody's lips. Who's going to cook the breakfast? To which Anne Hutchinson replied, Leonard. Is there nothing that he can't do? With things kicking off on the Beechwood estate, where Joy has installed a hot tub, Pam DeLay took the part of her next-door neighbour. Hello, 999? Yes, it's Helen. That's Kilo Alpha Romeo Echo November, Helen. Rob Williams saw things the same way. Oh yes, our noise is acceptable, but yours is totally beyond the pale. Julia Delitzsch took a different view. I'm with Lee and Helen on this, and I thought Joy totally overreacted. Why can't they agree she uses the spa, noisily, but only at weekends? But Pam was unconvinced. Only occasion I've really ever been with Helen was when she was stabbing Rob, and even then Clary and Susan could have done the job better. Ouch. Elsewhere, Darcy Jorgensen started a discussion of how George Grundy could possibly have been unable to tell the difference between turkey poults and pheasant chicks. Paul Newman commented on the intensification of Ruth's accent. And Rob Williams guessed, wrongly it turned out, how Jolene would get her revenge on Eddie. She's going to sing, isn't she? Melly McMerryweather posted a link to the most popular baby names in England and Wales last year, which featured a number of Ambridge names. While Oliver has been knocked off the top spot, it remains at number two, with George and Henry also in the top 10 for boys, while Lily and Mia are in the top 10 girls' names. And finally, Lana Robertson pointed us to the Archers doing Steve Lamacq's Round Table on BBC Six Music this coming Thursday. Rex, David and Tracy review the new releases. And with that, I'll return you to the studio.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you to everyone who has posted their thoughts up on the Facebook group this week.
And this week we had a load of new members on Facebook, starting with Judith Mazur,
Tracy Collins,
Helen Davis,
Tom Socky,
Portia Gray,
Carol Hartfree,
Michael Weston. Now, we are on Twitter under @dumdidum. We always include the @thearchers hashtag using a capital T and A so that the visually impaired can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. Also, that hashtag is your opening for the tweet along both in the evenings and during the omnibus on a Sunday morning. Please try and include @dumtidum in your tweet so more people get to see it, which helps to keep our community growing.
As well as being @dumdidum on Twitter, Madame Berto, how can you be found?
I am @jberto_sanguen, G-U-E-N.
If we're talking about Twitter, it must be time for Tweet of the Week.
Hello, Royfield, Jacqueline and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of Tweets of the Week. The thread I suggest you take a look at this week was started by our own Ambridge Pony Club, @JenJStephen. Asking, genuinely curious, does anyone like Helen? There were 61 replies at time of recording, with the vast majority listing the numerous reasons why they don't like Helen, and just a smattering of people more moved by sympathy for her life experiences. And so to the medals for this week. In bronze position, it's Dominic Young, @Budgie500, who observes, so, this family photo, Shula's just gone. Dan was here, but I assume has gone. No mention of Elizabeth or her twins, Kenton and Jolene. So the photo is just the Brookfield mob then, with Beth, but not Toby. It's all about family. Very weird. In silver, it's James A. at Exeter Dormouse. Is a protest march worth the effort? Ask BBC Radio 4 analysis later. Meanwhile, on the Archers, we ask, is it ever wrong to throw flapjacks at Toby? And in gold, it's John Porter at Pie and a Pint, who says, when I was a local paper reporter, we'd have got a front page and an inside page lead out of the results of a soiled pants competition at the local flower and produce show. Well, that's it from me for this week. See you all again at the next Tweet Along.
Thank you, Theo. Thank you, Purple Pumpkin. Twitter isn't the only social media platform where we can be found. We are also on Instagram, where we are at DumDum. So if you like a bit of Instagram, do follow us there.
Yeah, and thanks as ever to all our contributors and to our social media supremos, Shambridge for her voices, and to our podcasting godmother, Lucy B. Freeman.
Gosh, there you go. That's been a dum-de-dum for you. I don't know how we've managed to do a whole hour's worth of content there, because strictly speaking, I thought that was a bit of a poor week, if I'm being honest with you, in terms of plot lines. We didn't even discuss Eddie and Kenton and Jolene and Clary storyline at all. I, for one, am glad that we didn't enjoy the arch as much this week.
One worth our time.
Exactly. Mm. But you know,
I would just say something, though, about Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Just one thing. Nobody mentioned Lee. You can cut this all out afterwards, but I found that Lee was a bit peculiar this week, along with Ruth. He was a bit... He kind of was sarcastic. He kind of... I don't know. There's something about his tone of voice. It isn't the mild mannered Lee that we're used to. He kind of was a bit snarky around the edges. But maybe it was just me looking too much into it. Let's see what anybody else thinks next week.
Was he snarky around the edges?
Yeah.
Hmm. Email her in next week, or even call her in next week, as let us know your Lee thoughts. Au revoir.
Yeah. Au revoir, Mr. Brown.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.